And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Welcome to Debate with a Republican, which I try to do at least once a week. I think it's good for the soul to try to understand the crazy people that are actually running this country. And someone who actually makes a lot more sense than our president, though that's not hard to do, is the guy sitting to my right. His name is Mike Lane. He is a Republican strategist and the president of Intellifence Strategies. Mike, it's always fun when you're on the show.
Mark, I'm going to do my best tonight to explain it all to you, but I fear I'm going to fail by the end of the night.
Well, my listeners have already, on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, have all kinds of questions for you. We will get to them. And folks, if you want to ask a question, it's easy to do. You can post on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, or you can call in live. The toll-free number is right there on the screen, 888-488-MARK. Lots to talk about. Last night on 60 Minutes, George Tenet, former CIA director, finally told us the truth. I wish he'd told us sooner, but really it's interesting. The stuff he told would have been really controversial 3-4 years ago. Things like there's absolutely no connection between Iraq and 9/11. Things that he warned the president several times about 9/11 to do something about it, and Condoleezza Rice ignored him. And the fact that the president wanted to invade Iraq, and all his neocons wanted to invade Iraq long before 9/11, all kinds of interesting information. I'm glad he said it. It's certainly something that those of us in the Democratic Party have known for years now. I think it's a little too late. But it does help to make the record clear that all those things that your party's been saying for so many years are out-and-out lies. Now we know that it's not a question of being misinformed. It's a question of out-and-out lies. And we can take them one by one.
Well, Mark, first of all, let me say I did the most difficult thing that I have done in the last 10 years of my life last night, and that was I actually watched 60 Minutes. It was painful. It was horrible. But I did.
So you don't
I
like saw 60
George
Minutes?
Tenet. I saw George Tenet. Let me just bring up Mary Mapes and Dan Rather. That's a good start. We won't degenerate there.
We won't talk about the fact that Dan Rather was right, even though the documents were forged.
Let me say that I found Tenet, for the most part, to be a fairly compelling subject to be interviewed on 60 Minutes. He was interesting, and for the most part, he was pretty credible. But there was one part that I thought his story fell apart on, and I don't think he quite said as much as you wanted to hear, but we'll get into that.
Well, let's just take it one by one, okay? He starts, and if you didn't see 60 Minutes, it's well worth your time to check it out. And also, of course, he's written a book, and it's all in connection with his book and so forth. And I'm not going to be too praiseworthy of George Tenet, because in my view, while he was very compelling last night, it could have made a difference 3 years ago. It could have made a difference before the 2004 election. Now we all know what he's saying is true. Now it's like, oh, well, thanks for telling us now. But let's deal with them one by one. First, he says that before 9/11, he warned George Bush many times. He even says he warned Bill Clinton as well. But that right in the summer of 2001 was the summer of threat, which we first learned about Americans with Richard Clark, who talked about it before your friends and your party tried to trash him personally, which was very hard to do for an honorable man like Richard Clark. But he talked about that he specifically pulled Condoleezza Rice aside, said that there's going to be multiple attacks on the United States at home, that the attacks are imminent, that you should expect mass casualties. Mass casualties. And what she did is she gave it to what he called a third-tier group to take a look at it. He wanted to go in and do something right away in Afghanistan. We've heard, by the way, that Samuel Berger, whatever you think of other stuff, he also told Condoleezza Rice to do something right away. Richard Clark talks about a plan to involve the Northern Alliance to do something right away after the coal bombing. What we've learned is that at least before 9/11, this was a president who was focused on Iraq, but really didn't want to confront al-Qaeda.
Okay. A couple things here, Mark. First of all, when Tenet said that he went to see then-National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, he said he laid it out to her, and what did he want to do? Well, what he said last night, or what I got out of what he said last night that he wanted to do, was he wanted to depend on the same intelligence that the Democrats have been telling us for years is useless and what's with this. He wanted to depend on the intelligence, and he wanted to launch a preemptive strike against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to take the Taliban out and launch a preemptive strike based on the same intelligence, the same level of credibility the intelligence had that you and your friends have been complaining about for the past 5 years.
Well, now, you used the word preemptive strike.
That's what Tenet wanted to do.
And clearly, in some sense, it would be preemptive because Tenet had all this intelligence that Al-Qaeda was going to do these attacks on the United States. But it wouldn't really be preemptive. Al-Qaeda had already attacked the United States, not just with the World Trade Center, but with the embassy bombings and with the bombings of the USS Cole. So whereas I have real problems under international law and with our view in the world of doing an attack on a country that had never attacked us, a country like Iraq, fighting Afghanistan before Al-Qaeda attacked us would not only have been preemptive, it also would have been justified by the norms of international law. It would have been responsive. And therefore, although I grant you part of it would have been preemptive, it definitely wouldn't have had, I think, the nasty world reaction we've seen from our war in Iraq.
Well, I think it would have had a nasty reaction, but you know what? I don't care about the nasty world reaction. I think, actually, Director Tenet got this one right.
We can all agree in hindsight that we should have attacked Afghanistan.
That we should have attacked Afghanistan preemptively, but I say that and I establish the precedent that preemptive attacks have their place in this, and when you're depending on intelligence, which Director Tenet made a strenuous effort to say, look, this is an art. You look at the best pieces you can. It's never the complete puzzle. The mosaic is never complete. And then you make an estimate as to what you think is going to happen based on very partial information. Sometimes you can get it wrong. We might, back then, have gotten it wrong that they were going to attack us in September of 01. As it turned out, he was right. But if we got it wrong and launched a preemptive strike, I still would have been very, very supportive of it because I think it was the right thing to do based on the intelligence that we thought we had at the time.
Again, it's all characterization. I mean, as you know, Bill Clinton did attack Afghanistan in 1998 after our embassy bombings. At the time, you may recall that the Republican Party was up in arms. How dare we attack Afghanistan? The important thing is to focus on Monica Lewinsky's blue dress. You may recall that's exactly what people were saying in November of 1998 when we did attack Afghanistan. Obviously, in hindsight, it was the right thing to do. But the thing that strikes me is how many times he came to the president, how many times – he's not the only one who said this. Richard Clark came to the president.
No, he said
Condoleezza Rice reads memo that Bin Laden determined to attack the United States, and they all put on the back burner because they wanted to focus on Iraq.
My memory of last night's interview is that he actually said he did not go to the president.
Right. He said he went to Condoleezza Rice.
How this thing's working in Washington. You don't go to the president on these things.
You go to Condoleezza
Rice. You go to somebody
else. And the president, as is his wont, rewarded Condoleezza Rice. She's now Secretary of State. He seems to always reward failure, including, for that matter, George Tenet with the Medal of Freedom, and I want to get to that in a second.
All right.
Let's move on, though, to Iraq. Very interesting stuff. What he says is that right after September 11th, literally on September 12th, as he put it, Richard Perle comes up to him and says, Iraq has to pay a price for this.
Right.
At which point, Tenet looked at him like, what, are you crazy? Are you delusional? Same as Richard Clark, who also testified before Congress that the president said, Richard, we need to find a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. And Richard Clark said, Mr. President, there is none. He said, well, you can't just tell me that. Look it up. Richard Clark said, I've already looked it up. There is none. He made him write a report. Richard Clark wrote a report that said that there was none. The president said it was unacceptable. Rewrite this. He rewrote the report, still saying there is none. George Tenet made it clear, not only is there zero connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, he said, even though the president said that Al-Qaeda might do Saddam Hussein's dirty work, Tenet said, we never believed that. The intelligence never showed that. The president said, what if there were 19 hijackers armed by Saddam Hussein? Tenet said, we weren't telling the president that. In fact, he made it clear that there has never been a single operational act of the Iraqi government against United States civilians. I mean, there's our planes up there. There's never been an attack by Iraq. What struck me last night is how angry and forceful Tenet was, as we all should be, about the threat from Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda's allies. We should all be very, very strong against that threat. And the war against Iraq has not only taken our attention but away from that real threat, but actually helped Al-Qaeda by moving our attention away.
Well, I think Director Tenet was angry about a lot of things, including last night. I thought he was rather angry at the 60 Minutes interviewer who seemed to be questioning his integrity, questioning...
He was given a tough interview. I had no problem with that.
No, he came across, I thought he came across as very honest And three times the interviewer from 60 Minutes essentially called him a liar and when they were discussing the torture issue. And Tenet said three times, let me make this as plain as I can. We do not torture people.
Yeah,
he goes, oh, sure you torture people.
Yeah,
three times.
Right.
Well, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
You know,
because it all depends on what the definition of torture is. Oh. We all know that they're playing semantic games.
Waterboarding is not torture in my mind.
Well,
and
then let's discuss it. Let's be honest about it. You know, let's just say, let him say, all right, we did do waterboarding, but it's not torture. Or even what, even if we don't want to say what we did. Just define, is waterboarding torture or isn't it?
Tenet said last night, he specifically said waterboarding is not torture.
No, he didn't.
Yes,
he didn't answer the question. He said, I'm not going to talk about techniques, but we didn't torture anybody.
You have to listen carefully.
But you changed the topic.
It was one of those comments that was talked over by the interviewer as they were both talking at the same time. If you listen to Tenet real closely at that point, he does say waterboarding is not torture.
I'll listen again. I don't think he said that.
It was in there.
But I want to get back to my original point, which is this was an administration. As we've now learned, as no one can doubt, that fixes the facts around the intelligence. The intelligence was Iraq was not a threat. In terms of nuclear weapons, even their bad intelligence said it was at least 5 to 7 years away. Cheney's claiming it certainly occurs. He said the evidence was not beyond a reasonable doubt. Maybe it would work in a civil trial, not a criminal trial. This is the information that was given to the president.
Right.
And we know that the president or Dick Cheney, probably Dick Cheney, Richard Perle, Wolfowitz, and their allies decided, we're going to go to war based on this. And the question is, why didn't they tell the American people what Tenet was telling them? Give us the intelligence and say, look, we think Iraq could be a threat in the future, 5 to 7 years, and for that, we want to waste 3,000 American lives and hundreds of billions of dollars. Let the American people decide. Instead, selling the war to us was the slam dunk Tenet was talking about, not actually doing the war.
Oh, well, that's the part where the credibility, I think, breaks down. And we'll go back to that probably
after the break.
Let me say, to say that they were hell-bent on attacking Iraq from the beginning.
They were.
Based on, right now, the single comment of Richard Perle.
Single comment?
Based on the single comment.
Do you want more evidence? Because I have a lot more evidence.
How much did we see last night other than Richard Perle saying, being reported by Tenet as saying, Iraq's got to pay for this? That's the only thing he said in 40 minutes that indicated there was one person who was interested in getting Iraq for
you
this.
You can't take George Tenet in a vacuum. There's George Tenet's comments. There's Richard Clark's comments about how the president ordered him to go back three times and find a connection that wasn't there. There's Paul O'Neill, former Treasury Secretary, all good, loyal Republicans, who wrote in Ron Suskind's book, actually provided us the map on January 30th, 2001, 10 days into office, when Bush is busy dividing up the oil fields. British Petroleum gets this, Mobil gets this. You can't take Tenet's comments in a vacuum. That, plus the Downing Street memo, every single piece of evidence makes it clear they were fixing the facts around the intelligence. That's why I thought Tenet didn't really say anything new. I was convinced of this long before Tenet. It was just confirmation.
Everyone in the world, every intelligence agency knew in their intelligence estimates that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, that he had the chemical weapons, and that he was pursuing the nuclear weapons.
No.
That was what we knew at the time.
They thought he had chemical and biological weapons. He wasn't. He didn't know it beyond a reasonable doubt.
Listen to Colin Powell. No. Listen to Colin Powell at the United Nations.
Colin Powell regrets what he said at the United Nations.
Everybody regrets it
and
now.
And so does George Tenet.
Everybody regrets
and
it now.
And so should you. But if you want to call in and challenge Mike or me, it's easy to do. Join in the conversation. We will let you get a word in edgewise, even if we don't let ourselves get a word in edgewise from time to time. Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back after this. In many ways, the stuff that Tenet raised is all old.
History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. one that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice. If you're concerned that we've become a nation whose national policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a line embedded in BS, then don't miss Escape from Orwellianation, a talk show in which concerned regular citizens like you and me, not self-serving media spinmeisters, wade through the barrage of newspeak and doublethink that pollutes public discourse today. Big Brother, big business, big media, and the big national parties who collude to keep we the people afraid and in the dark would prefer that you not watch. Show them who's in charge. Tune in to Escape from Orwellianation right here on Channel 10.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating the issues of the day with Mike Lane, Republican strategist. And as you know, I used to work on the Hill for the Democrats, so we get nice bipartisanship here, I guess. Mike, what strikes me about all the debates that we just had in the last segment and about what George Tenet said last night, it's old news to me. It's amazing that Democrats and independents long ago knew there was no connection between Iraq and Afghanistan. They long ago knew Iraq didn't have nuclear weapons and wasn't an imminent threat. Mm-hmm. And long ago knew that weapons of mass destruction scare tactics, even though he didn't have chemical and biological weapons, what, some 100 nations on Earth have chemical weapons? I mean, mustard gas was used in World War I. The heart of what Tenet said last night was Saddam Hussein was not a strong threat against the United States. He was a threat like, you know, Libya was a threat. There are little countries that we don't like that do things we don't like, and he's a bad guy. Lots of them around the earth. But the real threat was Al-Qaeda. And the heart to me of what made George Tenet so upset and what has made Democrats and independents so upset over the last 4 years is we've taken our eye off the ball of Al-Qaeda in order to focus on this, you know, gnat, this mosquito that is Saddam Hussein. And ironically, by removing that dictator, we've actually made the situation worse in Iraq than it was when he was around.
Well, okay, a couple things. Number one, there's been a lot of criticism of the president and the military effort to catch and actually contain Osama bin Laden. Now, you heard George Tenet last night say, look, that's not the way it works. You don't corner anybody in Tora Bora. That's not what the terrain's all about. That's his
words. He said we didn't have enough troops.
No. His words exactly. You don't corner anybody in Tora Bora. That's not the way the terrain reads. Those were his words exactly.
Yes. But he also said that he was in charge of that effort. He was the first. In fact, they called it the first war the CIA ever led.
Right.
So he is particularly, if you will, responsible then for Osama bin Laden escaping. This is where he's really going to bend over backwards to try to protect himself. What he said is we didn't have enough people there. And I think that's right. I think we didn't have enough people there. And I think we still don't have enough people there because we're spending 10 times as much money and manpower in Iraq.
Well, again, we've got, you know, the exact numbers classified. We've got roughly 15,000 troops, the vast majority of them
and
special forces.
And 10 times the number in Iraq.
The vast majority of them special forces. The Russians found out when they were at war with Afghanistan that you don't win with conventional troops in the mountains of Afghanistan. You need special forces. That's the only way to fight the war. 15,000 may or may not be a good number of special forces, but you don't want to put division after division in there. You can't roll tanks through those mountains. It doesn't work.
But the heart of the problem with the Bush administration, as you well know, has nothing to do with Afghanistan. I mean, I can complain, I think rightly, that he should have recognized the Al-Qaeda threat prior to that becoming a threat, prior to 3,000 Americans dying. But the heart of the question is when we have this most vicious attack on American soil, really since, by a foreign power, since the War of 1812, that I can think
since
of.
Since anything.
It's worse than Pearl Harbor. That's the guy you focus on. And yet it is clear, to use your words, the administration was hell-bent on going after Iraq. And that's the thing that I think.
They weren't hell-bent on going after Iraq. That's
what I said. How can you say that? How can you say that with with what Tenet says about Pearl, with what Richard Clark says, with what Ron Susskind's book about Paul O'Neill says, with all the evidence that this government...
First of all, Paul O'Neill was Secretary of the Treasury. He was hardly in on the War Council.
His map is his map.
There's a map.
What are you going to do with that map? The map that they tried to put him in jail for disclosing a top-secret map. Why 10 days after George Bush is president is he spending his time, his first 10 days in office, dividing up Iraqi oil fields? There's no good answer for that, Mike. You can't give me one.
I wasn't there.
You can't give me an answer for that. It is indefensible.
I don't think Paul O'Neill's credibility is the highest of anybody in this
entire
thing.
But you can't say that Paul O'Neill, Republican Secretary of Treasury,
is
incredible. Richard Clark, the terrorism czar, the guy that Dick Cheney said, take over the White House while I dive underneath, appointed by Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush, is incredible. And George Tenet is incredible. Plus,
no, I didn't say George Tenet. I said George Tenet had for the most part, a lot of credibility last night.
Richard Pearl has never denied that he's made those comments.
Oh, no, I think Richard Pearl did say it. Obviously,
the president has never denied that he told Richard Clark three times to try to find some tiny connection between Afghanistan and Iraq.
Right.
He hasn't denied it either. It is now 4 years after the president got on a ship and declared mission accomplished.
Everybody,
and it's very clear now that the war in Iraq had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda or Afghanistan or 9/11. Can we agree on that?
What we can agree on is that every intelligence estimate around the world put weapons of mass destruction, chemical capabilities, and pursuing nuclear capabilities in Saddam Hussein's hands back in 2000 and 2001. That's what every intelligence thing did.
What Khalilisa Rice said is we have to act now before there's a mushroom cloud. Dick Cheney said he already has nuclear weapons. They tried to scare us to go into war, and what George Tenet said is it's a slam dunk to convince the public to go to war. What he didn't say is it's a slam dunk that Iraq has these weapons.
That is the single piece of Tenet's presentation last night that I found to be incredible, to really lack it. When they asked him about the comment about the slam dunk, he tried to twist it and turn it. You could tell his body language was different, his voice was different, his facial expressions were different. He was trying to twist it into saying, well, I didn't really say that the intelligence is a slam dunk that they have the weapons of mass destruction. What he tried to say last night, unconvincingly to me, was that when we need to make this presentation out in the public, it will be a slam dunk to make the presentation convincingly. Oh, man, talk about a weak effort to justify your comments. That was the biggest lack of credibility
as you say, we
in the
weren't
whole thing
there,
last night.
But he followed up that comment to say, it's if they needed me to convince them to go to war. And that was compelling. There's no question that they used Tenet as the fall guy. But they were determined to go to war, come hell or high water. They were going to invade Iraq, whether 9/11 happened or not, whether there was evidence of any kind or not, whether our allies wanted to or not. Saddam Hussein could open up all his palaces, bring in all the inspectors. These were people that were going to invade Iraq no matter what. That, I think, is now clear before all of history.
If Tenet was so clear on what he meant by that, why did he not testify as to what he meant when he was under oath in front of Congress in the summer of 2003, and when he was under oath in front of the panel...
They didn't ask him about the slam dunk
panel then. He could have...
I don't think Woodward's book was out at that time. But no, I agree he should have talked earlier. I said at the very outset, this is a guy who should have told us these things earlier. Let me ask you this.
You think maybe that really there's not as much there, and they're trying to sensationalize this and make it look good, and why would they try and sensationalize it? I can give you 4 million reasons
isn't about
why
George
they're trying
Tenet.
To make it look good.
I consider George Tenet a yes man. I'm not a big fan of George Tenet. I think he was a yes man to Bill Clinton and a yes man to George Bush. I think he tells presidents what they want to hear because he's learned, like all too many people in Washington, if you want to keep your job in Washington, you tell the president what he wants to hear, whether it's true or whether it's false. Richard Clark told the truth. He was kicked out on his ear. Joe Wilson told the truth, and his wife was outed as a CIA agent in the most traitorous act done by a vice president of the United States since Aaron Burr.
Okay, first of all, we know that it was an inadvertent discussion by Richard Armitage over at the State Department.
Was Karl Rove inadvertent? Was Dick Cheney inadvertent?
Karl Rove was not the source. Richard Armitage
was the source.
There were
several sources of this smear campaign.
Richard Armitage was the source, and Robert Novak has testified under oath that
Richard Armitage was inadvertent a source. It may well be that Richard Armitage was inadvertent, okay?
He was the
source. You're not going to deny that Dick Cheney had a coordinated campaign to disgrace Joe Wilson and to do so by outing his wife and told Scooter Libby to do it. You're not really going to deny that, are you?
I think
you're not going to deny that Karl Rove had a concerted campaign to out a CIA agent, to ruin one of our hardworking agents and all the people whose lives are in danger because she's a covert operative, which, by the way, was also established last night.
I don't think so.
He said he's a covert operative. Everyone has said it.
He did not say that.
Yes, he did. Everyone has said it. Patrick Fitzgerald has said it. There's no dispute about that. The part of the matter is there any justification for the President of the United States destroying an intelligence asset just in order to try to get the American people to believe in a lie? Why did they put that lie in the first place? Tenet took it out twice, and they snuck it in a third time. Why was this administration so hell-bent on lying to the American people, trying to persuade them that Iraq was going to nuke New York when everyone knew it wasn't true?
Well, we didn't know it wasn't true.
Sure we did.
As Tenet said, the estimate is an incomplete mosaic. You're looking at it. What do you have?
Tenet told him it wasn't true.
No.
All the intelligence sources said it wasn't true. All the European intelligence sources said it wasn't true.
No, absolutely not. The British.
The British took it back.
But not when it was delivered. They didn't.
Yes, they did. And so did the Italians, who gave him that document.
The George Tenet did.
He took it out twice.
He did take it out twice.
Now, why did they sneak it back in? Why were they so determined to sneak back in something they knew to be false?
Speechwriters write a lot of things, Mark. They're sitting there writing the best thing they can, and it gets staffed out to the various agencies. I mean, you've been around this for a long time. It gets staffed out. It's up to the people who know it.
Basically, the president's going to lie. The president's going to lie, and it's up to the CIA to catch him in that lie. And if the president gets away with a lie, we can't blame the president for lying. We blame the CIA for not catching him when he tries the third time.
The president's not going to lie. The president depends on the information that the people who work for him and work for the government, work for the American people, give him.
And those people have been rewarded.
If you're not getting the best information, if the best information you have is somebody who's reading a partial mosaic and gets it wrong, then you're going on incorrect information.
Stephen Hadley and Condoleezza Rice and Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney were determined to sneak that "we're all going to die by a nuclear weapon" into that State of the Union speech. And every time they tried to take it out, and every time they snuck it back in, and I don't think you can justify that.
It wasn't that memorable a line during the speech when it was given. It's only in retrospect after
it was
memorable this whole thing,
in that you ask anyone why we went to war with Iraq, and they will tell you it was
to enforce United Nations resolutions.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah.
I want to hear from you folks. Do you think we went to war in Iraq? When you went to war in Iraq in 2002, do you think we went there to enforce United Nations resolutions? Or do we go there to stop Iraq from being a nuclear threat against the United States? You know, they used that argument recently, but I don't recall Dick Cheney in 2002 saying, we must go to war with Iraq right now to enforce United Nations resolutions. If they were so important, we'd be stopping the genocide in Darfur. Give us a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last call.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind. It doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness, sir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm discussing the news of the week. If you want to join in the conversation, it's easy to do. Toll free, 888-488-MARK. My guest is Mike Lane, Republican strategist. Mike, however we got into Iraq, it's a big mess. It's a real problem. And the Democrats, as you know, have passed a bill with a very little Republican support. Senator Hagel, there were a few Republicans.
Senator Hagel and Senator Smith from Oregon, I think.
There were very few. Lieberman went with the Republicans, and those two Republicans went with the Democrats. Got 51 votes to leave Iraq, to say that we should leave by July or at the latest October, but we'll give funding for the president in order to do so. And what I find interesting is the Democrats, there's talk about compromise, about, well, if you don't want a date certain, let's do benchmarks. Let's see if the Iraq government can reach a benchmark, and if not, then we'll withdraw our troops. Bush says absolutely no compromise, none whatsoever. And then the front page of the Post today completely sickened me. Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister, who is a Shiite, apparently is purging people in the military, in his military, that are doing a good job at attacking the Shia terrorists, because he only wants to go after the Sunni terrorists. The only thing worse than a genocide and standing by while a genocide occurs, to me, would be to have American troops unwittingly help the genocidaires. And it seems to me that Maliki is out to make Iraq a Shiite country. I don't want any part of it.
I think that's a stretch. There are a lot of things internal to Iraqi politics that we don't know about, we don't understand, and make it difficult for him to hold together the coalition that he's looking for. What I particularly like about what he's done is that he's tossed over his old buddy, the guy who put him in office,
Al-Sadr,
is now, you know, hiding like a little coward over in Iran, and his people all left the government and things like that.
We'll see. The government is corrupt from top to bottom.
Well, as the whole culture over there is corrupt.
Right, and yet we are losing thousands of lives. I mean, we are losing hundreds.
They're trying. They're making progress.
Every month.
It's frustratingly slow, but they're making progress.
4 years ago, the president said mission was accomplished. Since then, every 2 months, he said we're making progress. He will say we're making progress for the next 57 years if he were president, and we would still lose thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, hundreds of billions of dollars. The war is over. We lost.
Well, I will absolutely disagree with you there. The war is not over until the general hands his sword over to the opposing general and surrenders.
There is no opposing general.
Yes, there is.
This is not like a battleship in Japan where Hirohito surrenders. There's Sunnis and there's Shiites. And you know what? The Shiites, as the majority, think they can beat the Sunnis. And the Sunnis, who used to rule Iraq, they think they can beat the Shiites. And both of them want to kill each other. And we, our GIs, struggling hard to live and survive, are standing in the middle.
Mark,
and I remember a million people dying in the 1980s when the Shiites and the Sunnis fought each other, and the only good thing you can say about that awful war is we weren't in the middle of it.
All right. First of all, General Petraeus still has a lot of optimism and a lot of hope that things are going to be going well.
And if he didn't, he'd be fired and we get someone else who has optimism.
And I'm going to tell you, when it comes to military matters and strategy, I'm going to put my faith in General Petraeus.
Why not? He's the seventh general to try.
And not in Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, who have never worn the uniform, don't know what they're talking about, don't have any appreciation for what military service is all about.
And President Bush, who refused a direct order because he was high on cocaine, and
now
Dick Cheney, who was too busy driving.
If you want to go with Fisco-Nancy
you want to go with generals? Let's talk about Eric Shinseki. Let's talk about all the generals that were offered.
The general that's there now is a guy named Petraeus.
Right, and he knows that if he doesn't say yes, sir, he'll be out on his ear.
He knows it's going better than it was. We have a new strategy. We have new strategy and new tactics. We're taking the fight to them, And we will know, he says, by the fall, September, October, as to whether or not this new strategy is going to work.
And if it's not working in the fall.
If it's not working and it shows no potential of working, then I'm with you.
Then we pass the Democratic bill.
No.
The Democratic bill gives us till October.
No,
that's
because
the
you
fall.
Do that, you do
and
that.
Then,
no.
And then if it's all working well and Iraq becomes this beautiful, shining democracy where they have at least as much electricity as they had under Saddam Hussein and people are singing and hugging and singing Kumbaya, then everyone will change their minds and they'll say you were absolutely right.
I don't think that's
going to happen.
Let's say it's making progress. It looks like it's working, but it's going to require another 3 to 5 year commitment.
What does it mean? The president says every month we're making progress. I think we're going backwards.
Making progress means that we're getting more help and cooperation from the indigenous population. They're ratting out the terrorists rather than ratting us out to the terrorists.
Mike, the amazing thing to me is that the way the Republicans look at this war, they actually think that it's our troops against some insurgents. I don't know if you actually believe that that's what's going on. It's an amazing thing to me because that's not what's going on. What's going on is Shias are trying to kill Sunnis. Sunnis are trying to kill Shias. They're both angling for who's going to be in control when we leave. And it's not us against them. It's both of them against each other and against us. That's why we're building walls between Shia and Sunni that apparently neither the Shia nor the Sunni want.
And let me say that for them to have a chance to succeed, we've got to be able to tamp down the violence.
Who?
The
Shia
Iraqi
or
government.
The Sunni?
The Iraqi government.
The Iraqi government. So the Shia.
The Iraqi government.
So the Shia, you want the Shia to trump the Sunni.
It's a joint government.
It's not a joint government.
It is a joint government.
They won't share oil
it's
with
a federation.
The Sunnis. For 2 years, they've promised provincial elections. One of the things provincial elections do, as you know, just as in our country, is it allows the outlying states to have a little bit of power. Provincial elections would give the Sunnis and the Kurds some stake in their country. But they're not going to do it, and they haven't done it. Why haven't they done it? Because they want the Shia majority to rule over the Sunni and the Kurds. And I say, it's not our battle. This is an ancient Islamic war. I don't want to fight on either side. And frankly, what really scares me is Iran, which is a Shia government, and Dick Cheney, and I'm not saying he did this on purpose, but Dick Cheney has done more to help the government of Iran than any American president in history. He has taken away their enemy to the right, Afghanistan, their enemy to the left, Saddam Hussein, taken away all their Sunni enemies, and made Iran one of the most powerful states in the United States. Ahmadinejad should every day pray to Allah that Dick Cheney has helped him so much.
All right. Well, first of all, you're not going to have the possibility of a stable government that provides peace and security for the Iraqi people while there's a war going on. If we can tamp down the violence and let them negotiate their political settlements while the violence is being tamped down, then they've got a chance. But Mark, if you pull out and you let them disintegrate into civil war, number one, they've got zero chance of a political settlement, which is what you keep telling me you want.
I do want a political settlement.
And number two, the destabilization of that state will export into the entire region, and you will have such chaos and violence in the entire Middle East, not contained just to Iraq, that we don't even want to dream about what that world's going to be like.
They've had 4 years.
Right, and we'll take four more and then eight more after that if we need it.
U.S. troops there. Here's an idea. Let's say you have until October to reach a political settlement. If not, we leave. And, you know, it's your choice. It's your country. I got to say something. It's just like my taxes, which I've been working on even past the extension deadline. When the deadline comes, you start getting to work. I'm afraid I was like this in college as well. When the paper is due, you stay up all night and you get it to work. If the Iraqis know that we're not going to be there for the next 30 years, we do plan to leave. We don't plan to spend all of our tax money and our children's tax money on trying to build a country when they're trying to knock it down. If they know we're going to leave, maybe they'll reach a political settlement. And if they don't, that's their country.
That's
their choice.
That's something that you quietly and diplomatically tell them when you're working with them towards achieving a solution to the problem. It's not something.
That's why that bill would really help.
You never reveal your plans to your enemy. And what you're doing is you're taking
our
battle plan.
Who's our
enemy? Giving it to the enemy.
Who's our enemy?
The terrorists in Iraq that are attacking us every single day.
You're wrong.
Yes.
In Iraq, the terrorists
are
not that big a factor.
If the terrorists are not attacking us, then why are we losing people?
Because they're killing each other. Al-Qaeda wasn't even in Iraq. But they're there now.
Yes,
but you know what just happened in Anbar province? The people of Anbar province, who are also Sunnis, as Al-Qaeda is Sunnis,
right,
got so tired of Al-Qaeda requiring all kinds of religious fatwas right. and so forth that they themselves took out Al-Qaeda. And I say that's terrific.
And they are cooperating with the Marines who are in Anbar province, and that whole thing has turned around. It used to be the worst part of it, and now it's almost the best part because
the point
what
is
the Marines
they
are doing
over
there. No. Not without the Marines there. It'll disintegrate again unless you have the security necessary, the security provided by the military forces of the coalition.
Look,
unless you do that, it isn't going to work.
We can only be so many places
you
in the world.
You can't have a political settlement without security, Mark. It doesn't work.
There are so many places in the world that need a political settlement. To me, my heart cries out for Darfur right now, where men, women, and children are being massacred. We don't care about them. They're African, they're black, and I guess there's not enough oil in Darfur. Iran is a very dangerous threat. North Korea is a threat. There are all kinds of threats. Al-Qaeda is still alive and well, and at least according to George Tenet, plotting to get a nuclear bomb, and that is a real threat, as we know. In fact, it's the reason why I think most Americans wanted the war in Iraq, because they believed Dick Cheney that there was going to be a nuclear weapon.
Which is another good reason to have Iran surrounded. If they're working
but
on the nuclear weapon...
But we're helping Iran right now.
We've got troops in Afghanistan. We've got troops in Iraq. We've got
our
them surrounded.
Our troops are helping
And you pull them out, you know, you do what you want to redeploy them to Stillwater, Oklahoma, that's fine. But then Iran can do whatever it wants to do.
Our troops are helping Iran. They're helping Iran right now
because they're
helping a Shiite government persecute the Sunni population. And it's not like I have this great sympathy for the Sunni population. Heck, they persecuted the Shiites and Kurds when they were in control. I don't have sympathy for either of them. I think they all need to try to get along, and if they don't, we need to just get out. You know what's interesting? I'm actually reminded to some extent of when Israel became a state. The British were in the middle there, and the Jews wanted to have a Jewish state. The Arabs wanted the Jews out. They wanted an Arab state. They were killing each other. The British were trying to stop it, and they both just started killing the British, frankly, until the British left, and then they fought it out and came to a partition. That's how it worked. That's how this war will never end, ever. If we're there 5 years, if we're there 10 years, if we're there 30 years, the day we leave, the Shia and the Sunni are going to fight and try to get control of that state.
You may be right, but it's premature to conclude that. The evidence is
every
that
year
it can still
it's premature.
Work.
Every
it
year
is,
it's
it
premature.
Is premature.
5 years, 10 years, 20
you know
years. How much are you willing
you
to
know,
spend? How many lives? How many American lives are going to be lost before this war is over?
I wouldn't. Put
how
it,
many
I,
are going to be wounded?
I wouldn't
how
put ma- a number
how
on
much
it.
Time is this going to go?
I wouldn't put a number on it. You stay in there while
here's
you've
an
got
idea,
a
Mr.
probability
Republican.
Of success, and you go for it until it's clear that it doesn't work.
Hey, Mr.
And
Fiscal
it's not
Conservative,
there yet.
How about taxing the rich and making them pay for this war? If we're going to spend
hundreds of billions of dollars... Everyone benefits. This is not a soak-the-rich scheme. You know, everyone pays taxes
for national
security.
How come we're not paying any taxes? How come we're not paying any taxes to support this war?
Everyone pays taxes for national security.
Our children and our children's children are going to have to pay twice the amount of taxes tomorrow to fund the war. If President Bush feels this war is so important, how about if he goes to ExxonMobil and says, you know what, you've made huge profits from this war, let's do a windfall profits tax so that at least we're fighting this war, we're losing American lives so you can get your cheap oil? How about we're funding some of that to the government? He won't do that, will he?
Mark, as you know, I have been a critic of the deficits run by this administration.
So you're willing to raise taxes to support this war?
No, but I think there's a lot of spending we can cut that'll get the deficit
out of control. No, wait. You're not willing to raise taxes to support this war. Basically, what you're saying is that if we're going to have this war, we need to cut other things. Social Security. Let old people starve. We've got to fight the war in Iraq. Don't raise taxes on the rich. We've got to fight the war in Iraq.
No.
What would you cut? We have $300 billion to fight this war in Iraq so far. It's going up. What would you cut?
Let's start with capping everything. And then each individual thing has to be specifically approved to go up. Just cap non-defense spending right
and
now.
And as the baby boomers retire, everything's capped.
Cap non-defense spending.
They just won't
right
get
now.
Social Security. And
well,
the kids might
get anyway.
Not get an education. And,
oh,
you know,
come on.
We won't have money
Who's
for
not going to get an education?
The
Everyone
Institute
gets an education.
For health. The point is we have to make choices. And this war in Iraq was a lousy, awful choice. You know what's really scary? We're not fighting for democracy. The way we support Putin in Russia, the way we support dictators
in Egypt.
Oh, I don't
think we're,
all,
I don't think we're
Arabia,
all that supportive of Putin
and
anymore.
Egypt.
You know,
it wasn't for democracy,
but it's not there anymore.
It wasn't for Al-Qaeda. It wasn't for weapons of mass destruction. There's only one reason we fought this war, Mike, and it has three letters. I bet you know what those letters are.
Well,
I think our folks can guess them themselves. Toll free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
Do
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Let's impeach the President for life.
My name is David Bell. I am a resident of Virginia's 11th Congressional District, and I ask Representative Tom Davis to initiate or support investigations into violations of the law by President Bush and his administration.
Tom Davis, my name is Jean Reynolds, and I'm one of your constituents. I want you to join immediately with other members of Congress to begin an investigation of the criminal acts that George Bush has committed.
I'm Nick Spengler of Addison, Virginia, and I would like our troops to come home and Bush to get out of office.
My name is Nancy Maynard. I live in the 11th Congressional District, and this message is for Tom Davis. I'm asking you to please investigate for impeachment.
My name is Bruce Smith. I live in the 11th Congressional District in Woodbridge, Virginia. I want Congressman Davis to support the investigation of President Bush and Vice President Cheney and those that foisted this war on us.
Hello, Congressman Davis. I'm Carrie Plonson from the 11th Congressional District, and I'd like you to take immediate action to investigate George Bush and his offenses in leading this country into a war that's unwarranted and there is no solution for.
We have to impeach. I am just appalled that we would not, quote, waste our time with impeachment. The message to the world has to be that Bush and Cheney are guilty of international war crimes about which we can't do anything. We can do a lot about the crimes committed within the U.S. Constitution.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You may think from the tone and tenor of my debate with Republican strategist Mike Lane that you won't be able to get a word in edgewise. I assure you it's not true. There's still time left if you want to call in live. Challenge Mike or me or both of us. You're welcome to do so. The toll-free number is on your screen. If you don't want to try to talk over us, but you want to write your comments down, it's easy to do. It's on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. And Mike, we have a whole host of questions already. Not so much dealing with Iraq, but about what is left being a Republican these days. Let me read these questions because I think they're very interesting. This is from Robert. And Robert writes, what exactly does it mean to be a Republican these days? I mean, what are the core beliefs? Is there any at all? Republicans used to and still may speak of fiscal responsibility and family values. So how do we get to such a national debt under Republican rule? The Plan B prescription plan, war contractors. Most of all, can anyone tell me who exactly ordered pallets of taxpayer money in cash to be loaded and sent to Iraq without requiring receipts? I really, really want to know who gave that specific order and whose idea by name, please. Let's deal with his comments one by one. He raises a lot of good comments, and I want to get to more from Robert in just a second. But in terms of what Republicans believe, I mean, fiscal responsibility used to be a Republican value. Now it's clear that if there's any party that's fiscally responsible, it's the pay-as-you-go Democrats. There are a few, I'll grant you. I mean, I can think of Jeff Flake of Arizona or John McCain, for example. But the great majority of Republicans have deserted fiscal conservatism, haven't they?
The trend of the national party, the trend of the congressional caucuses in the last 10 years has not been encouraging. I think that there has been a lot of soul searching as a result of that.
Is your party changing? That's what I want to know.
One of the reasons I think that we lost the majority in the Congress was because the fiscal conservatives were no longer enthused about the Republican record over the last 10 years. I told you not more than 10 minutes ago that I'm not going to sit here and defend the deficits of the current administration.
True, but even you couldn't tell me what you would cut to pay for the war in Iraq.
You're
not going to raise taxes, and you cap everything. I mean, we have natural growth in America. There are more people every year,
right?
and they need more things.
We'll argue each one up individually, and there are some things I'd let up, and, you know, you bring the deficit.
$300 billion is a lot of money.
Yes,
this
it is.
War in Iraq is extremely expensive. You're not by, you know, capping a little bit here. You might save, you know, a few million here and a few million there. you're not going to get to $300 billion without raising taxes.
But let's say I get to $200 billion, okay? So then I've cut
the
deficit.
I don't even think you can do that.
Then I've cut the deficit by two-thirds.
Give me $50 billion you would cut.
Oh, you and I have had this discussion before. We can cut $150 billion out of the farm program. Just like,
actually, they're all
boom,
good with you.
Gone.
But you know what?
In fact, I think it's $200 billion now. Gone.
No, you know what? Not Republicans nor Democrats will do that because the subsidies help the farm states, and that's the problem with
right.
the Senate. But I'll tell you what. You and I can agree. We're over with farm subsidies.
Right.
Absolutely. We city boys agree on that. But his other question. He says, I really, really want to know who gave that order to give $8 billion of walking around money to the Iraqis and didn't get receipts. Whose idea was that by name, please?
Right.
I'd really like to know that, too. How about a congressional investigation? Would you support one to find out who gave that order and who lost the money?
I'm going to surprise you, Mark. I absolutely would support a congressional investigation.
I'm glad to hear that.
I think a congressional investigation on that would make so much more sense than these other little avenues that, you know,
people
are going down.
No, they all make sense.
Oh, come on. Now you have Jack Murtha on national television yesterday saying that impeachment is on the table for the President of the United States. Jack Murtha, the guy who is Nancy Pelosi's handpicked deputy, you know, talking about impeachment. We had this argument.
Well, you know.
We had this discussion before the election. We had this discussion before the election, and you assured me impeachment was not on the table. And now none other than Jack Murtha says impeachment's on the table yesterday on Tim Russert.
I don't consider Jack Murtha the representative of the Democratic Party. As much as Pelosi handpicked him, as you know, the Democrats rejected him and put in the much more moderate and well-spoken Steny Hoyer, who I think is someone that even you might appreciate and respect.
I've met Steny. Steny's
a
good guy.
So Jack Murtha is a bit of a loose cannon. And now, don't get me wrong. If we prove in these hearings and investigations widespread breaking of laws and so forth, then of course impeachment would have to be on the table. But I'm willing to take it one step at a time. That's how these things go.
Let's go back to the cash. There may be a reason why that was done. Maybe there was maybe it was CIA money to pay people off. Maybe it was a lot of walking around money for people who needed it.
We need to know the answers.
Maybe it was shipping stuff. There are enough questions here. This should be investigated. If there's confidential or classified information, that can be shared with the committees and the appropriate thing, and they can be told.
I'm glad to hear
but
it. I'm
right.
glad to hear
just,
you agree with Robert.
I'm really glad to hear that.
On
the face of it, Robert, you know, you tell me that, you know, you've got to...
Robert's got more questions for you.
Okay,
Mike,
bring him on.
He talks about family values, which Republicans used to believe in. And then he mentions everyone from Mark Foley to Randall Tobias, apparently, mm-hmm. who's been seeing prostitutes. Tom DeLay to Bob Hayes.
Oh, I heard they were just
Cunningham.
Escorts.
Not to go mention the complete I don't recall why I made the decisions to fire those attorneys, but I did fire them for good reason, Gonzalez. It's a long list indeed. So, Robert asks, what does it take to be a Republican these days that doesn't make an enormous hypocrite of someone to your values?
Okay.
I think there's got to be a lot of soul searching among Republicans. I know a lot of independents who tell me they used to be Republicans. People
mm-hmm.
are deserting your party in droves, and
yes,
I think for good reason.
Yes, they are. As they deserted your party in droves a while ago, and for good reason back then. These things go in cycles. Our congressional caucuses got a little arrogant. Got a lot arrogant. Got a lot out of control. They started thinking that maintaining power was the most important thing, maintaining power for itself, for the sake of maintaining power, rather than maintaining power for the purpose of carrying forward the people's agenda. They made that mistake. They paid for it by losing the majority.
I don't have to say a single word. We completely agree on this.
They paid for it by losing the majority. And I got to tell you,
I don't think they're learning their
lesson,
though. I
love the way the Democrats are acting now, because even though I thought you were probably in power for 20 years after this shift took place, I'm thinking we're going to get it back in 4 or 6 years the way you're acting these days.
Not at all. The Democrats are acting very responsibly.
No.
They're doing oversight for the first time in 6 years.
No, you're doing witch hunts. You're not doing oversight.
It's not witch hunts to ask Condoleezza Rice to tell us why she put that lie of the nuclear weapons in the State of the Union speech and to demand an answer. And if she doesn't want to answer, then maybe she should be held in contempt of Congress and we'll have a nice little battle over oversight.
You can do that, and the courts will rule in her favor.
I don't think so.
You're not trying to...
Well, that's okay. We'll put her in jail until it gets up to the courts.
Good luck.
Sergeant-at-Arms can do that.
You know, and he's not going to.
Oh, yes, he will. He works for Congress.
I know, but he's not going to.
If she's held in contempt of Congress, are you telling me she won't turn herself in?
No, Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So what, she's going to barricade herself in the White House?
No.
And then we have these private armies going back and forth?
She'll go home, and the sergeant-at-arms can go knock on her door with the handcuffs and make her do the perp walk. And
that would be good.
And
that would
be good for America. The cameras will be there, and you have the Secretary of State doing the perp walk for no reason
other than
Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid just have this chip on their shoulder.
I'll tell you why it would be good for America.
And I'm going to love this. We're going to come back in 2 years, not 6 years.
It would be good for America. And the reason it would be good for America is that it's nice for the administration to learn a lesson. They are not above the law. They are not above oversight. They work for us.
All right.
And if we, the people, through our elected representatives in Congress, want the Secretary of State to answer questions, she damn well needs to take the oath and answer the questions.
It's not the Secretary of State you want. It's the former National Security Advisor, which is an unconfirmed member of the White House staff. Executive privilege applies. There's a long history of executive
privilege. Richard Nixon used to talk a lot about executive privilege.
It's just not going to work.
It didn't work for him either.
Congress doesn't have the right to subpoena an unconfirmed member of the White House staff. It just doesn't have the right.
We need to have answers to these questions. And if that's the only way to get them, that is the way to get them. Let me go, though, through a few more things, because I think Robert makes so many good points. I don't have time to mention them all. But she says, what defines a Republican these days? Rush Limbaugh? Ann Coulter? Jack Abramoff? What? Who's left?
Well, I think Rush Limbaugh is a good Republican.
You think he's a good Republican?
I think Ann Coulter.
He just did a ditty, Barack the Magic Negro. Did you hear that little ditty?
I think Ann Coulter's a little bit on the edge, and I think Jap Abramoff is somebody that we wouldn't accept. Does that answer all three of his questions?
Let me move on. We have a writer who calls herself Mad Fook. She agrees with Robert and says that the Republican Party has very much changed since the days of 20, 30 years ago. Vicky is interesting to me because Vicky is someone who I know voted for George Bush. She is a fundamentalist Christian, in her own words, mm-hmm. and she writes on the blog a lot. And she writes, surprisingly, I agree with quite a bit of what you have to say, talking about there being few real Republicans left. Now, she goes and she attacks the Democrats as well, but it's interesting to me that here's a woman who really should be absolutely in your party, and she still is because she strongly is pro-life on abortion, but that's about it. That's about the only reason she has left to vote for Republicans. If you're losing people like fundamentalist Christians because of the corruption in your party and the fiscal irresponsibility and so forth, you've got a real problem on your hands, and I want to know what the Republican Party is doing to repent of its ways and to change and to become a better party.
All right, Mark. As you know, I make my living doing election strategies.
That's right. So what are you doing?
I'm going to take off my partisan hat for a second. I'm going to talk to you as a political professional strategist.
Okay.
And tell you where the problem is and what we need to do, and not coincidentally what the Democrats need to do, because we're both making the same mistakes. We have descended and disintegrated into a gotcha society for politics. Everything is about what has the other guy done, how can we blow it out of proportion and horrify and shock the independents in the middle that, oh, they are so bad. It's very infrequent that anybody talks about what they stand for again. And the reason that we've fallen into this thing is because for a long while it worked. I think it still works in many ways. I think we're turning the corner where, it obviously still works. I mean, how could we as a society spend 10 days talking about whether or not some obscure shock jock named Imus, you know, should lose his job over calling somebody a nappy-headed hoe? Who ever heard of Don Imus before he did this?
It's a different issue, but the point is this.
But we spent 10 days talking about it as a country.
He would be a uniter rather than a divider. Instead, he's become the most divisive president since Richard Nixon, perhaps even including Richard Nixon. What we need is a president, maybe someone like Barack Obama, who can bring us together to be Americans first, partisans last. This is Mark Levine, signing off.